We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly interview show where top chess players, authors, content creators, and accomplished amateurs discuss their careers and share stories and chess improvement tips. Perpetual Chess is a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and we'd like to give special thanks to our presenting chess education sponsor, Chessable.com. For more information about the show, you can go to PerpetualChessPod.com. But without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another bonus edition of Perpetual Chess. We are here to discuss the Singfield Cup Hans Niemann / Magnus Carlsen story once again. Our guest from Tuesday's episode graciously offered to give some bonus content. Of course, he wrote a blog post about this controversy that's gone semi-viral, and he's always insightful on these matters. So before we do introduce and welcome our guest, I just wanted to mention two news items that have happened since last Friday's bonus podcast with Greg Shahadi. I am recording this here on Thursday, September 15th, midday. And the only two major developments, obviously there have been a lot of people weighing in about this story, but to my mind, the two most important on the record things that have happened are that on September 10th, Chris Bird, the chief arbiter of the Singfield Cup, put out a statement which, among other things, said, "We currently have no indication that any player has been playing unfairly in the 2022 Singfield Cup. This includes all rounds to date." And then Dr. Kenneth Regan, who I mentioned last week and who I interviewed a few years ago and is considered one of, if not the leading authority on cheat detection, engine detection in chess. By the way, last week I said he was a statistics professor. He's actually a professor of computer science and engineering, although with a mathematical background. But Dr. Regan on James Altucher's podcast, which I recommend listeners listen to this episode that just came out, which I'll link to, said, and I quote, "There's no evidence of cheating in over the board at all in Hans's games, and that he screened 106 events counting online plus over the board since January 2020. So with those two news items covered, let's just quickly remind you all who Grandmaster Jakob Augard is. He's the co-founder of Quality Chess and of Killer Chess Training. And in Tuesday's episode, we discussed everything except for the Hans Niemann controversy. So now we welcome him back to discuss the news of the day. Welcome, Jakob.
Thank you very much. And I apologize to the listeners that I have my camera off, but they probably wouldn't notice this anyway.
Yeah, that's okay. They'll be listening to this only. So, Jakob, you've been following this story closely, had to drop off of social media because, like a lot of people, this story can be consuming and triggering, especially if one is going back and forth. But to your mind, Jakob, what have been the biggest developments in this story, if any, in the, say, the past week?
I think a lot of the biggest development have been sort of off the record. But I think more the chance to reflect on what happened is really important. So I wrote a blog post, which was intended for the few hundred members who have a Killer Chess training. And a lot of people had told me and I wrote very quickly, there's a missing he somewhere. And so I just put it out very quickly because what I saw happening online seemed to be anything but due process. And I didn't have the same experience of the facts as people had. We have Nakamura's stream, which you can still find on YouTube, I think, where he, for half an hour, said in any other way than using the words that Hans was cheating and that he was a very, very poor player. And generally, it was not... Nakamura has since said he has not accused Hans of cheating. And I think this is technically correct. It was just a half an hour of smear because he clearly just got caught in the moment and thought it was entertaining and I'm on a roll and you know, the chat was great or something. And he sort of was milking it for comedy effect. And as such, it was entertaining, but maybe not very responsible. And then, I don't know if it was the next day or something, streaming, and suddenly there's like, I need to make some phone calls, and he's back a few minutes later, and oh, we'll not do any more live coverage from St. Louis, like he cannot share their broadcast. So you could guess who these phone calls were from. I have no extra information. I don't know if any extra information exists online, but you could think that there was someone who were not very happy at how the tournament was being portrayed at one of the biggest biggest outlets of chess. I think probably Nakamura should at some point make a personal apology to Hans, and it could probably be swept under the carpet quite quickly. I just don't think that's, or maybe not. I don't know. There would be personal relations. There's so many people who don't like each other. We shouldn't worry too much about that. But really, a lot of people sort of thought that this was very high quality investigative journalism. And I don't think we have had much of that. I don't think my blog post was. It was half an hour. I quickly wrote it. The idea was to put it on Facebook. And then kind of said, no, I'll put it on our blog. And then I'll put it on Reddit. And I'm like, I've heard what Reddit is. But I didn't think it was anything special. Like, I thought it was a place where a few nerds are. And then, I think it has been... The post where it was there had been viewed like 200,000 times or something. Wow. And the actual blog post has been read more than any of my books. And then I got all these messages with people who were unhappy with me comparing cheating in online non-priced games to cheating on your homework and thinking like there are more victims in the online games. Well, it was written for the members of our academy, but it doesn't mean that I have like special insights into the Hans Niemann thing. There was some observations I can make. Like, there was made this assertion that he has the most meteoric rise of any young player ever, which for me was, how do you Americans say it, garbage. because we like if you take exactly the rating point rating Hans had, like before he started to increase his rating a lot, and exactly where he ends, then you can probably find that he is the player who made the fastest in time, not in games, but the fastest in time improvement from that rating to that rating. But let's say we start with 2300, we go to 2700. You'll probably find that it's Magnus Carlsen who had the fastest. You also, if you look at Erik Aas's jump in the last 18 months, it's been very similar to Hans. It's just been like 30, 40 points higher, starting point and end point. I remember Geary, it was like he became a grandmaster at 14 and then bang, he was 2700 almost right afterwards. It was very, very quick. And Aronian was 2550 and then he was 2750 and he was 21. So there's a lot of these things, and there's been some graphs of people who are debunking these various stories online. There was one which I'm sure you probably saw, with saying that when Hans played games that were online, he was doing well. Well, were broadcast online, he was doing well. When he was playing games that were not broadcast online, he was doing worse. And I thought actually there was some merit to coming with this this observation. But again, there were so many choices and so many things that had to be explained before it becomes anything else than, oh, we find a statistical anomaly that fits our assassination target. First of all, the dates chosen were in the past. Like, it was not for the last 2 years or something. It was something like from somewhere in 19 to somewhere in 20. So it was like a specific period. So what is the most obvious reason for where they start and where they end? Because if you go before that, the stats don't help you. If you go past that, the stats don't help you. And I haven't actually checked the stats. They could be absolutely bogus. So there definitely is something there. And then we have Kenny Regan, who is with his 106 events since January 2020, have not found statistical anomalies. And I actually watched the podcast also with him explaining it. And the way he's explaining it, it's let's just say that you could technically fly under the radar and cheat, but you'd have to do it so minimally that the swing of rating points, which were in that tweet, would just have no relationship to it. there's a lot of these things, like really garbage theory. And let's not, you know, I said let's not talk about Elon Musk, and then we have talked enough about that. But another theory which was really widely spread as having real credibility was that Magnus's preparation was leaked. And this was like, it was incredibly senseless. First of all, you know, he travels with one second to tournaments, which is Peter Heine-Nielsen. The idea that Peter Heine-Nielsen would sell Magnus's preparation or something, like, what? Why? And to Hans Niemann, why? And then you can think about maybe they had hacked the internet of the house where Magnus was living. How would like Magnus and Hans and his team of MI agents or whatever it is, like, did anyone spot Tom Cruise in St. Louis? You know, it's just so farcical. But especially the way it was made into something, an evidence of something of cheating, especially the lack of understanding of how chess works with how chess cheating would work, and combining the two was just frankly ridiculous. We had this situation where after the game with Magnus, Hans explained, you know, I actually looked at this morning and saw it. And after some point where Magnus made a mistake, Hans said, oh, my preparation continued. And then he just waffled out some moves. And then, yeah, one of them was a blunder because he sort of like was saying something. I've seen Kasparov say, give a long variation, and the end of it says, oops, here I think I'm a queen down. You know, so what? This was pre-computers, but and in front of a big audience. But it was just like, well, the idea that someone is lying about preparation and then showing what he had prepared, like, what kind of cheating is he doing to do that? Let's get a narrative. How is he going in and just waffling the moves, bang, 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 like that in the interview? It makes no sense. This was preparation for the game. He somehow looked at it before the day. We saw then in the interview explain how he got there from the Catalan, and it made perfect sense. This is a guy who works around the clock, as anyone who met him knows.
So he doesn't, because he said that in my interview, but you mentioned in your blog post, Jakob, when you would check in on him while you were doing a training camp together, every time you did, he was studying chess.
Yeah, like it's like, I think I said this in the blog post as well. So one thing I didn't check again, it was what I wrote. But the training camp was not a big success. As in, you know, we got along fine, and you know, my kids were here. We played table tennis. We had a good time, and so on. But from a training perspective, my approach to it and his approach was not really working. He has a very singular way of sort of, I want to do everything my way. And he left here having said that, you know, I think I really understood what I need to work on now. And later on, I've given him some training material and so on, but I don't know to what extent he has used it. But a lot of the time, he would just be up in the room. And whenever I went in there, he was lying on the bed with the laptop, playing through games, analyzing stuff. I literally had to drag him out of there for him to do anything else but chess. Other people have said that on the Magnus II Seconds on the Chicken Club chess podcast. Said, you know, he was in Paris, never been there before. He crossed them all in blitz, the top French players, except for the two stars, but the 2680 guys. He crushed them and went back to the hotel to study chess. It didn't go anywhere, didn't see anything.
Yeah, and in one of the post-game interviews, he even did describe his match with MVL. Of course, you're referring to what Laurent Frissonnet, the story that he told. But
other player there was Mossad.
Yeah, and he even played a public match with MVL where Hans said, you know, it ended up being something like 12 games, and they were tied after a certain number, don't quote me on the 12, and then went to an Armageddon game. So this is known, this MVL, of course, one of the strongest blitz players in the world, and Hans battled him to a standstill.
The world champion. Yeah.
So no surprise that when they asked MVL in one of the post-game interviews what he thought of these allegations, of course, MVL's perspective is going to be framed by that experience. So, of course, he doesn't think that this kid who he saw with his own eyes, hold his own against him in blitz, is getting engine assistance.
No, so I think this was one of the two reasons I asked if you wanted to talk about this. So actually, I asked if we could do it so we could add to the other thing, the other podcast we did, which was out 2 days ago. And I asked you, I think, just after you released it. So it was a bit bad timing. This was one of the things, for people to understand, because, you know, our own students have asked, are there anything in these accusations? And, like, was the preparation leaked? Doesn't that make more sense? It just makes no sense at all if you know all the factors. The other thing is with, you know, I'm not a technological person, but I think it was Daniel Nerdyshky who said on his stream that, you know, oh, it should be pretty easy to cheat. And Kalia, who's we already know from the Reddit thing, is more tech than I am, but also didn't know all the facts. Said, well, it's not metal detectors they use. It must be semiconductors, which are sensing the special metals done to make to transmit things. And I have no knowledge. People should check this out for themselves. But the idea that somehow it would be easy to cheat, like, I don't understand a narrative where that works, where, you know, like I do akin it a little bit to Mission Impossible. You know, you have to make some very convoluted thing, where as the head guy, you don't have billionaire Tom Cruise, but you have vagabond Hans Niemann, who only owns one pair of shoes, who has this team of master spies at his disposal, who beats this billionaire owner's chess club security system. I'm like, really? And then afterwards, in the games, you see no evidence of cheating at all. And when they increased the security for the fourth round, there was no... they didn't catch him. Like, he comes there and, oh, there's increased security today. And they, you know, they really checked him and there's nothing there. It's just all so profoundly strange. I'm not saying it cannot be done. I'm just saying that it's normally not where you see things like this happening.
We're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with more from Grandmaster Jakob Augard. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by aimchess.com. aimchess has an algorithm which reviews your games from the major chess playing sites and then gives you actionable information about what to work on. I haven't been playing as much Blitz lately, just been busy with family stuff, and when I review my games, it shows. My openings are still good, but I need to work on my tactics, my end games, my advantage capitalization, and some other stuff. The good news is that Aim Chess has the tools to help you work on those things. You can review the specific tactics that you missed within the game among countless other features. So you can check out Aim Chess for free. And then if you do decide to subscribe, use the code PERPETUAL30 to save 30% on the first month, or you can also use the link in the show description for aimchess.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But we have this history of over the board cheating allegations and so on, and they're always rather comical. And then suddenly we're going to get this high spy cheating by a guy with no resources. Of course, we had the Bulgarian Ivanov, who was cheating with a device in his feet, in his shoes. And he was never officially busted, but when he was playing Maxim Dlugy, he refused to take off his shoes when he was asked to. And it was suddenly his dignity of strip search me all you want was suddenly with, no, not my feet. You can see my bottom, but not my feet. It was too much. And he sort of ran out of there and didn't really return. And of course, Max is Hans's mentor, so it's easy to write a very bad blog post of insinuations that lead from one thing to the other because we have the Kasparov court by Dynalov, and then Dynalov somehow becomes a spy, master spy. Operative and helps Topalov to become world champion, even though you can't find traces of it in the games. And then the KGB goes in and forces Kramnik to cheat in the toilet, the same way they later did athletes at the 2014 Sochi, where they built a tunnel into the doping, what it calls storage for doping, and switched blood samples, which is why Russia has this big sports ban. And in the same way, you could build this story with Max discovers how to cheat in chess, and there's an Indian narrative which is sort of similar way. But you know, those stories at least technically make a little bit of sense and sort of like the most paranoid person with some knowledge could maybe think of these things. But what we have had instead have been utter garbage. So, and then we have this other thing. We have this chess.com statement.
Okay. Well, before we get to that, Jakob, which I do want to get to, the one other prong I feel like that we haven't discussed, I agree with what you said about the statement put out by the Atlanta Kings, Twitter account. I mean, whoever is behind it seemed to say that they were making a good faith effort, but I know that Todd Bryant, Strong Chess, did his own analysis and found some data that disagreed. And in any case, whatever they found, I'm going to go with what Ken Regan found, being that he's the world authority on matters of engine detection. But there were also these videos put out targeting specific tournaments. So, you know, someone found the best performance. So as you mentioned to me, in a prior conversation, like, we're already past he cheated at Sinkfield Cup. Now we're just digging through every moment of Hans's over the board history. And two tournaments in particular, videos were made about. One, I believe, was like an invitational in Cuba, and one was the tournament where he got the Grandmaster norm in Charlotte. Now, I have some info about the Charlotte one, but before I get to that, Jakob, do you have any reflection on those? I don't know if you saw those particular videos.
I have no information, no.
Okay. Well, basically, he was just saying in these particular tournaments.
I think I cut off from social media before those things really floated.
Okay. He was saying in these particular tournaments, Hans's Senapon losses were quite low, although Hans didn't go undefeated in those tournaments. And I have less information on the Cuba tournament, but I did reach out to FM Peter Giannatos about the Charlotte one. And Peter just wanted to make sure that listeners knew that they were aware of, even though it wasn't public yet, they were aware of the prior online cheating misadventures or whatever you want to call it. They were aware of Hans's reputation before he played this tournament. So he said they were watching everyone. They weren't simply targeting him, but they were watching everyone very closely, watching for trips to the bathroom, and that they actually submitted the games for the tournament to Ken Regan himself after the tournament. And Peter shared with me a quote from the email, which he sent. He showed me the screenshot where Dr. Regan wrote, "I gather that Hans Moak-Niemann is the person of interest this time, but in the larger scheme of things, his screening results are not so excessive. This summary includes reports for rounds 1 to 7 in isolation, but looking at his sequence of games, it struck me that rounds 3 to 9 should attract more suspicion, so those are included as well. However, the ROI scores for the selections are no higher than the scores for the tournament overall, and those are not excessive." So, and if you listen to Dr. Regan's interview, you'll hear that, you know, he speaks in a very stats oriented language, as he does there. But basically what he's saying is there's nothing suspicious in that tournament. And Peter again assured me that if Hans were somehow cheating in that tournament, as you say, it would have to be some spy level thing. And we already know that he's a super strong player. So Occam's razor would suggest that is not what happened.
There's this big effort of trying to catch him for something at some point. Where on the one hand, it's quite grotesque. On the other hand, if it was successful, you know, like, okay, you know, if it's there, it's there. So it's sort of like, I think actually for Hans's reputation, this, you know, that there's these 1,000 internet detectives out to prove that he cheated, and they are so spectacularly failing. It's probably a good thing. Now, I'm not here as his spokesperson. I don't have an incredibly close relationship to him. I talk to him a few times a year. We are in good terms. He was in my house. I like him. He seemingly likes me fine. But it's not a big bromance. But my reaction was to the same way I would do with anyone I knew who were receiving great unjust treatment, whether innocent or guilty, then there should be a proper process, and that we will probably talk about this later. But I wanted to say a thing about Ken Regan, because I watched the whole podcast, and it was very interesting from two perspectives. The one was when he was talking about computing and stats, and there is a narrow window. You can maybe beat his system. But generally, my experience, because there are some known cheaters, like, you know, they would buy games or buy their way into tournaments. So there are some of these people in chess, and it's sort of most of them are known. I can avoid mentioning anyone so you don't get sued. There are some people who are revered for big achievements where everyone knows that it was as a result of cheating, and even high FIDE officials know it, and they don't take it out of the history books and stuff like that. Bar that, I just felt like this, there's no process here. I really lost my thread there, didn't I?
Okay. Well, I want to highlight something that you mentioned again before we hit record, which we should
I should say I have about 39 degrees fever here. So.
Okay. Well, we appreciate your doing this, Jakob. But one thing we should mention is we're not condoning Hans cheating online.
No, not at all.
And as you mentioned to me, he's an unfortunate hero, you know, in that regard.
I said it differently. I said, this was like one of the few things I managed to put down on paper in this meaningful way, that he's the perfect test case to expose the fallibility of our status quo because he's a flawed character. The thing is, if it was, let's say Gukes was accused of cheating and there's just no history or no evidence or no nothing, then it could just be laughed away. But because we have a situation where a person has, I sort of was comparing to shoplifting some places. Like if he has cheated in rated games on chess.com. To boost his streaming. It's shoplifting. Now, shoplifting many places is a fine. Some places it's a criminal record, but hardly anywhere it's jail time. And then people come and accuse him of a bank robbery. And yeah, you can probably find it statistical correlation that bank robbers often started with shoplifting, but you cannot find one that is significant that shoplifters become bank robbers.
Right.
Because it would be so much less than 1% or 0.001% or whatever. I have known people where sort of was common knowledge that they did shoplifting for kicks, and it's, you know, I have never done it, but you know, it's just not the same as a bank robbery. And this is what would be to me to go in and do a very, very excessive, planned and very advanced technological cheating in the biggest tournament of the year, more or less, bar the candidates and the Olympiad, maybe. And comparing that to cheating online, where you know you in like 10 seconds you're all set up with a with a download link. Like you start with Googling, how do I cheat online in chess? And then 3 minutes later, you already won your first game. I'm but let's be honest here. There is things like, I think shoplifting is bad, but technically, it's probably less damage to society than speeding outside your kid's school. So all these people who are thinking that Hans should be banned for 10 years from chess because he cheated in a few games online, just remember, you have to go to jail for speeding in your car outside of school. Like, because that is the comparison we have here. It doesn't matter if someone saw you or if you saw there were no kids or anything. It's like, no, this could, you know, have gone extremely wrong, an extremely bad thing. It's one of the few things I probably haven't done, but I've been speeding other places. I'm probably a good thing I'm selling my car.
So we should get to the chess.com statement, speaking of online cheating, because that is another thing that that should be raised is, we know of the admissions of Hans cheating, but then there's the implication that there's been more cheating online. So I'll read the statement again. I read it last week, but just to frame this aspect of the conversation, this is from Danny Wrench, Chief Chess Officer of chess.com, who, again, and I believe this was issued last Thursday night. So that would be Thursday, September 8th. He writes, "The last few days have been tumultuous for many in the chess community. At this time, we've reached out to Hans Niemann to explain our decision privately remove him from chess.com and our events. We've shared detailed evidence with him concerning our decision, including information that contradicts his statements regarding the amount and seriousness of his cheating on chess.com. We've invited Hans to provide an explanation and response with the hope of finding a resolution where Hans can again participate on chess.com. We want nothing more than to see the best chess players in the world succeed in the greatest events. We will always protect the integrity of the game that we all love."
Okay, so I have quite a few pieces of objection to this and the whole thing with chess.com. So first of all, I want to make this really, really clear that I think chess.com is a great website. It's a great company. They have done really a lot for chess. Yes, I'm a dinosaur, I prefer over the board and so on, and this is quite obvious for old people like me. I think it's a great company. I think Danny Wrench is a really great ambassador for chess. But I think exactly because what I was saying with Hans being this flawed character is exposing that they don't have a robust and clear system and rules for how to deal with things, because I don't know, you're probably more well connected than I am, but what I have heard through friends of friends of friends is sort of, it's leaking that that there's been one or more cheating in Title Tuesday, and that is apparently what this is talking about. But there's a number of other questions to this statement. And the disqualifying of Hans from this global championship event. The first one is, how do you create a narrative where this is not somehow supporting the $82 million investment they have just made in Magnus Carlsen and his failing platform? Because that's a huge amount of money. That's a really big investment. And this is a deal that is not finalized. Because there are some questions there. Like, why did they remove Hans from the Global Chess Championship during the tournament? Like, why was that necessary? The second thing is, why are there conversations with people? Like on the Chicken Chess Club podcast, Jan Gustafsson said that he had been offered to sign an NDA so he could see the long list of people who have been at some point erased from chess.com for cheating, like grandmasters. And That seems entirely improper. like what? So it's sort of just offer, like, oh yeah, sign this and we'll tell you who it was. Like, that's not confidential information, especially when we have a situation where you're not allowed to see the evidence against you. You're not allowed to have a representative who sees the evidence against you. And you're sort of just convicted by the prosecution. With Lichess, yeah. Lichess, they just delete your account and they don't even say that you cheated. But everyone sort of knows why they delete accounts, especially if it's after a tournament where prizes are handed out.
Yeah, a couple of things on that. Jesse Cry told me the same thing. He was also offered to see that NDA list. And I'm trying to find the tweet, but Grandmaster David Smerdon in an exchange on Twitter said about that list. I'm assuming it means that he's seen it, but he said that once you've seen the list of people who've been banned for cheating on chess.com, he said, oh yeah, he said, once seen, it cannot be unseen. So yeah, I can only imagine. And that's why Jesse said he declined, because he didn't want to know.
Yeah, Yen was the same. He didn't want to know. And I take it from Jesse and Jan, who are both really high moral individuals, that was because they thought they would think less of people for something which was maybe not that important to them. But this is I understand the argument that they have these various technical processes and so on. But do you think the IOC doesn't have the same problem? They would love to be able to just say, oh, that athlete is doped. We're not going to tell you how we busted you, but we know you've been doped. You know you've been doped. And here's a 2-year ban. And if you don't accept it, we'll make it a 5-year ban or lifetime ban. That's not how the IOC works. It's a proper legal process. I'm really not myself today. I'm sorry. It's a proper legal process. And I understand the sort of the arguments of, oh, we're just a website and so on. But this is no longer the case. Chess.com is, especially with the acquisition of Play Magnus, we're now into some sort of close to monopoly. There is a non-profit that competes with them. And then there's FIDE, which is mired in its own problems. And from FIDE's perspective, this is a disaster, because they could negotiate with Chess24 and Chess.com and then get one of them to give better terms than the other, and now they have only one big website to negotiate with. And I think in that situation, chess.com has immense amount of power over chess, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. And I know from my life experience, you know from your life experience, that normally when your level of responsibility increases quickly, you don't really catch up to it immediately. And I think this is the moment for chess.com.
Yeah.
This is the moment for the chess world to have a discussion of better processes.
Yeah, I agree in that regard. Although I do just want to throw in, Jakob,
Please disagree with me if you do.
No, I agree with you, but I just do want to caveat that it's a very difficult platter of shit they're being handed. You know, it's this catching cheaters online. It's a borderline impossible job. And it's unfortunate that they can end up being the bad guys trying to police the bad guys. So I understand that's difficult, and that if people just wouldn't cheat, we wouldn't have that situation. But unfortunately, that's not the way the world works.
You know, most sports organizations are private companies in some form. So, and they all have legal processes. I think in chess, we need the same.
Yeah, I agree. And
keep it away from FIDE ethics. You know, they whatever they decide, you know that the truth is the opposite.
And we had a question from a Patreon supporter of the pod, Jakob, related to online cheating. It's from Andre Develd. Thanks for supporting the pod and for the question, Andre. And he mentions the fact, I'll read the whole paragraph. He says, my question is about online cheating. For me as an amateur, I get every few days a message from chess.com that someone cheated me. Of course, it doesn't mean anything for my life, but it means something for my online play. I really don't like the soft handling of online cheating for adults. My opinion for online cheating of title players is even stronger. The tournaments are getting bigger in prize funds, and the frequency is getting higher and higher. I understand chess.com from a business point of view that they're not eager to ban titled players when they cheat online, but I think it kills online playing if they don't take hard measures against the cheating. He says he thinks the only way to ban online cheating is to openly say that the penalty for adults will be they will be banned for life for a very long time. So his question is, why do you think online cheating has to be treated differently from OTB cheating? And obviously this is a kind of opposite tack to what you're suggesting, because he does not necessarily mentioning a due process, but I would love to hear your thoughts about sort of differentiation between online.
It's a very good question. So first of all, I think there are some differences that should really be understood. The first one is how easy it is to cheat online. So in terms of our analogy with real crime, it's you go into a shop, you see that there's no one behind the counter. Right by the door there's a chocolate bar. You're 15 years old, you're an idiot, you take the chocolate bar and run out of there. It was so easy, the actual damage was so little, and it didn't include planning. Now, then there we have the people who are using these bots and so on. So that's more like, you know, that this person goes in the shop, goes for a toilet break every half hour. And you sort of time, you know, you're waiting across the street, you see them go to the toilet and you go in and so on. Already it's a much more serious offense. And then there's the one where you come in with a baseball bat and a balaclava and, you know, you whack him over the head and then you steal a lot of stuff. So that's part of the case. But the question is, if you go in, you're stealing the chocolate bar because the chance is there and was easy, and he comes out and you whack him over the head with a chair, then it's sort of like between 2 and 3, right? And that's a little bit what online cheating and prized events is for me. But over the board, it's just the investment. Like the investment of energy into doing something so obviously wrong. Because it's no longer easy. It requires probably reasonable financial investment. It requires a conspirator. It's sort of like, for me, that it just seems the organization of it is a serious thing. But I don't think online cheating is okay. But I think especially amateurs have a much worse experience than stronger player has in general of playing online. I don't play much online, but I get like 2 messages a year. Like I know others, Short plays online all the time. He gets a lot of messages. So there's a volume thing. But yeah, it's a fair point. And I do think that one of the things is that we have an evolving situation, a new situation that never really been debated clearly in the chess world, and there's no consensus for it. Maybe Andre is right, and I'm simply from the past and haven't caught up. It's very reasonable argument.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's a slippery slope, and obviously the issue of false positives, which I think are less than 1%.
But this is the big point. Like, if there's if it's just accusations and it's like if you admit you cheated, you can come back. Otherwise, we ban you. Like, what kind of justice is that?
Right.
If there's some respectable system with organized evidence and a process to challenge it, I think we have a lot to agree on. And then every country has its different penal code and how much you have to go to jail for various offenses and so on. And often it's culturally determined. And yeah, we just need to sort of debate it out and find a consensus. But the current situation is bad and doesn't have to be my way. It has to be resolved in a meaningful way.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with more from Grandmaster Jakob Augard. Perpetual Chess is brought to you by our presenting chess education sponsors, Chessable.com. Chessable, of course, utilizes space repetition to help you remember opening sequences and tactical patterns, and they have a huge catalog of excellent courses, and they're dropping new ones at a blistering rate. New courses include one by Grandmaster Maurice Ashley. There's the new course Grind Like a Grandmaster by Magnus Carlsen himself with his friend Grandmaster David Howell. And The Life and Games of Mikhail Tal, which is an absolute classic book, is now on Chessable. And the video is done by Ginger GM himself, Simon Williams. So be sure to go to Chessable.com. They also have tons of stuff that you can check out for free. So Chessable.com, check out what's new.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
A couple other things. I mean, we should wrap up soon, but I did want to mention, I should have mentioned at the beginning, I think most listeners will know that obviously there's been radio silence from Magnus, no statement whatsoever. But as we record this, the Julius Baer Online Cup, I believe it's called, is starting in a few days, and Hans Niemann and Magnus are playing in it. And from what I'm told, there will be post-game interviews. So I don't know if Magnus is the Julius Baer Generation Cup starting September 18th, excuse me. So I don't know if I'm guessing Magnus might punt on these questions, but hopefully he's at least asked about it. And yeah, the beat goes on. I mean, I was wondering, after what happened, is Hans going to get blacklisted, or is Magnus going to refuse to play in tournaments that he's in, or something like that? But at least that does not appear to be happening as of the time we record.
So I predict no questions.
Yeah, I mean, and we should say, I hope you're wrong, but we should say Hans has things to answer for as well. I mean, I was a little disappointed that subsequent to the chess.com statement, he gave, true to form, Hans gave some more fascinating interviews and seemed pretty accessible to Alejandro Ramirez on the St. Louis Chess Club. But they never circled back to the air quotes additional instances of cheating, which I would like to hear Hans address, although I even more would like for Magnus to explain what on earth he was thinking, because as it is now, I feel like it's, you know, I've at this moment, I've lost some respect for Magnus due to the way he handled this. Even if Hans is guilty, as Feingold said in one of his videos, even if Hans is guilty, he didn't handle this well.
That video from Feingold was fantastic, because I was less coherent than I am, but it was still hugely entertaining. I hope I'm just a third or a quarter as entertaining as he is, but slightly more coherent. yeah, I didn't see anything from Magnus which was out of character. I in some ways he seems like fantastic. You know, like I was very, very disappointed with the fact that he was like, I'm probably not going to play the world championship. You know, I don't know. We'll see if Firusha wins. So I don't know. I don't feel like it now, but we'll decide later. And then the players are playing, and if you saw Caruana talking about it, he's like, you know, what do you do during the tournament? I'm in second place. I can definitely, you know, I can most likely make it to second place just making draws. And maybe it's a world championship match. And then if Magnus decides to play, I look like the biggest idiot of all time. And it was predictable that there would be head games like this. And the second place was Ding Liren, which was the only player who had no chance of winning the tournament, who started with minus one in the first seven games. It's really predictably bad outcome. And then Magnus has these conversations with Fiete, and I don't think there was, like, I think essentially he was just telling them, oh, I'll make an announcement at some point that I'm not playing. But at this point, I think officially he's still not told Fiete that he's not playing, because he used, and this is how I felt respected as part of the chess world, he used the announcement to promote a podcast about gambling that he was doing. So it was sort of like this, an announcement about the World Championship. You can see it in this podcast about gambling.
I get your broader point, but he did say in that podcast that he told Fiete in the meeting in Madrid that he wasn't playing.
Yeah, so, but that's not an official statement.
Right, but it is giving them word. I mean, it's not...
No. I'm sure that they knew he was not playing and they were already making different arrangements. But technically, he hasn't actually withdrawn, as I understand it. There's no contract has been presented to him. He has not refused any contract. I don't know about that. I don't think that's a technical problem. Fiete could send him anything, anytime. Do you wish to play the next World Championship match? If not, please let us know. And he will just probably just send them an answer from his lawyers. No, don't want to play. I don't think that's a problem there. But just the whole process did not take any... It was not malicious in any way, but it didn't take anyone else... the effect on other people into consideration. There was not a great feeling of, I think, respect for the colleagues before the candidates. These are the people he professionally spends a lot of time with. The way that... they, you know, Nakamura thought like he was full of, well, colorful language. And the others also were like, we don't know. Like, we just have to play for first. There's nothing else to do. While the final was, for me, it's entirely unfair. I think the World Championship is damaged much more than it would have been if we had known in advance what would happen. But we will recover, of course. But then also that the announcement comes and is used as a vehicle to promote a podcast about gambling and not made at a chess tournament or on his website or something in a respectful way. I sort of saw that, yeah, he does what he wants to do and he doesn't really care that much what others think or think that he has a responsibility towards others as long as he behaves decently. And a lot of people live their life that way. And here he probably just felt very unhappy about the game. He couldn't get the mind off of was there anything wrong or not. And then he thought it was funny to post that video or something. It was just annoyed, didn't want to play, went home, and then now taking no greater responsibility for the backlash which he has created. It's damaged chess a lot. I think it's entirely within character. And but on the other hand, you know, he's a fantastic player. When he plays, it's great for chess. And my biggest hero in chess of all time is Kasparov. And he's certainly also one of the most flawed people to have been world champion. So I don't think it's especially bad, but it's just very often how it is with top elite guys. They get there because they focus on themselves. So
that's a good point. It's well said. Yeah, and I did want to throw in just one little background fact. As we record, there's still so many statements coming out, albeit not from Magnus, but Fabiano Caruana's new podcast came out with an episode today where Fabiano said that he knows for a fact that Magnus was aware of Hans's prior transgressions prior to this tournament. So for anyone sort of trying to piece together a timeline of what exactly happened, making their own pet theory, be sure to put that in, because I definitely consider Fabiano trustworthy in that regard.
With that, I'm not going to say my speculation, but I can also work out why he knows. So it doesn't take a degree in detecting.
Okay. Well, Jakob, one final thing. And by the way, I should mention, I am going to interview Ken Regan. I've been in touch with him now, but we're going to give it a month or so. But I'm happy to report
one thing about his podcast, which I thought was quite interesting? Because first of all, I thought Ken was great. I think the work Ken does is great, but it also illustrates something else. So Ken is a reasonable player. He's an IM. He was 2400 like 20 years ago. I think last time he played was like 12 years, 10 years ago or something, and he sort of took a battering and hasn't really returned to over the board chess since. I understand he's very busy with his students and anti-cheating and his research into quantum computing. But if you see the video of him analyzing the Carlsen-Niemann game, it's a great advert. It's a great advertisement for the fact that he doesn't actually check games himself, because the moment he speaks about the chess, he speaks on a decent IM level, but there's a specific moment, which is move 32, where he's talking about the computer moves knight c4 and then it switches back and forth with e3. And so on, and maybe knight c4 was actually the better move according to the computer. And you will not find a grandmaster in the world whose hand isn't reaching for e3 with some kind of magnetic force of all their chess knowledge. It is just such an obvious move. It's only surprising if you sit looking at the engine. It's not surprising if you look at the board. It was probably the most obvious move in the whole game. I should also say that this move, bishop e6, that Hans played was really not that spectacular, even though it was, of course, useful to have it prepped. It was not a very deep move. I think just the statistics are great because they can show you things that strong players won't catch, but also I think strong players looking at games also can have some influence sometimes, but the statistics done by a computer with good parameters are definitely here to stay. You had a question about Ken.
Well, I was just going to say, and I'm definitely going to broach this with Ken, and you know, this can be discussed in future interviews as well, but to me, one of the lasting legacies of this whole unfortunate series of events is now we've reached a point where you can be watching someone playing with your own eyes right in front of you or on a screen. And we're not talking about online chess, we're talking about OTB chess in a room full of people. And you can still not be sure that they're cheating. And I just think that if that's how things are going to be, that has huge ramifications for how OTB tournaments will be staged going forward. And it's,
We already had this for 15 years.
But with the anal beads, which I know you said you didn't want to talk about, and the stuff in the shoes, like to me, it's like we're not talking about frequent trips to the bathroom. We're talking about I'm sitting here watching. This person hasn't moved, hasn't physically moved. And I still don't know that they're not cheating. But like
if you remember Fella, this is 2010.
Right.
In the 2010, Olympia, yeah. Olympia 2010. It's like there was no way of telling. Frassinet was sitting next to him.
On the team,
sitting next to him every day. And then for the final round, the team captain doesn't want to play Fella. And Frassinet is like, why are we not playing the guy who's winning? Why are we not playing him? Right. and like really angry about it. And the team captain and fella were, and I really apologize to the team captain if I'm wrong about the details. They were two out of the three people who were cheating together. And sort of the idea was that he would walk and you know, stop a specific point, and that would indicate A to H. So behind the opponents also, and then 1 to 8. So he would sort of give hints like this, and he would receive them on text messages. And because of that, it's not no longer legal for a team captain to be behind the opponents at the Olympiad.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
It's like, nobody thought he was cheating. He was busted because the I think it was like the president of the French Federation was visiting the third guy who was actually sending the moves on text message. And that guy was in the toilet and his phone was buzzing and he saw the text message, "We need moves," something like this. Mm-hmm. So it was like, again, even though this sort of seems very advanced, it's a little bit of a Pink Panther kind of cheating history.
Yeah, and Jan Nepomniachtchi in one of his post-game interviews did say that, you know, to the extent anything good comes from this, the concerns that Super GMs have been voicing behind closed doors will now come out in the open. I'm paraphrasing the quote, but that's where we are. I appreciate you taking the time, as always. Let's remind listeners about Killer Chess Training. For more unfiltered access to Grandmaster Jakob Augard and the new book, A Matter of Endgame Technique. Anything else to say in closing, Jakob?
Yeah, I wasn't here to sell my products, but thank you for doing it for me.
Gotta do it. Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. Big shout out to my producer, Matthew Passy. I'd also like to thank the Blue Wire Podcast Network, with whom we are proud to be affiliated. Be sure to follow us on social media, Beneficial1 on Twitter, at Perpetual Chess on Instagram, or you can join the Perpetual Chess Facebook group. You can email me, ben@perpetualchesspod.com. And of course, last but not least, I'd like to give major thanks to the Perpetual Chess Patreon and PayPal supporters. Those who choose to join that community based on their level of support can do things like submit questions for guests of the show, have access to live Zoom Q&A lectures with grandmasters who often have appeared on the show, going over chess games, answering questions, stuff like that. And you can even get access to ad-free Perpetual Chess if that's your preference. So, but most of all, thanks to everyone for listening, and we will catch you all on the next episode.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.